We are live, and so I get to welcome everyone to our December Integrity Conversation at Creating the Future. It is joyful to have all of you here with us. I am Hilde Gottlieb with Creating the Future, and before we get started, I just want to let everybody know that if Dimitri suddenly pops out or has his phone on, because usually we try and keep him silent, we are having something that nobody ever wants to have. We are having sewer problems. And so if the plumber shows up, that is where he's going to rush off to, because everything stops when that happens. So
Have you ever thought of adjusting your priorities, Hilde?
Like the sewer comes first. That we have just adjusted our priorities, Mark, entirely. It has a funny way of doing that for you. So, if he disappears or if his phone rings, we do have it on sound, and I apologize for that. For anybody who is watching, if you would like to join the conversation, please tweet to us via Twitter at the hashtag Creating the Future. We will look at blog comments and all the other things after the meeting, but during the meeting, if you are watching, the only place we're going to be looking is at Twitter, and only if that hashtag is there, Creating the Future. So let's get started with sharing what's been exciting with each other's lives since we last saw each other. And I know y'all pretend that we never do this and that I'm catching you cold and that you don't have anything idea. Oh my gosh, she's asking what's exciting, because we've never done this before. But yes, we've started every meeting like this for 10 years. So take a deep breath. Think about what has been awesome in any way. It could be awesome and meaningful. Sometimes awesome isn't so great. Sometimes awesome is the sewer backing up. But just what has been meaningful in your life since we were last together? And whoever wants to start, just dive on in. Also, if you will tell us where you're located, and if you are able to tell us whose traditional lands you are resting upon today.
All right, I'll get us started here. Hi, everyone. My name is Andrew Schulman. I was listening last time, and then I rewatched the video and realized that Hilde called me out and asked me to introduce myself, and I wasn't there at that moment. So this is a good two for one right here. I'm in Los Angeles, which is on the Tungvar lands. And the thing that has been awesome lately is that over a 2-week span, my wife had a birthday, celebrated Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, and my daughter turned 7. And my family that lives on the East Coast was here to celebrate with us.
Awesome. That is awesome. Yeah. Especially during this time when none of us have been seeing our families for so long. That's wonderful. Yay. Who else? What's going on in your world?
I'll jump in. It's Donna from Idaho. So I'm zooming in from Idaho, where we're in a weird state, kind of cold, kind of warm, kind of, you never know what it's going to do. And a couple feet of snow, hopefully in the mountains, coming soon. So we just watch the weather and hope that we get something that's wet anytime. And I am coming in from near Boise, Idaho, which is Boise Valley Shoshone and Bannock tribe land. So honoring them this morning. And my awesome, I live next door to my parents, and my dad is they're both 89. My mom is amazingly spry and active and healthy, and my dad is starting to wane a little bit. And so each day is a new day for him, especially that he is not quite sure who he is, where he is, and what he's doing sometimes. And other times he's doing great. And so I'm sharing that because I am so fortunate to get to be next door to them and see them each and every day. So that's my awesome.
Wonderful. Oh, that is awesome. That's really awesome. Who else? What's going on in your worlds?
I can go. So I was like debating, so I go the personal route or the professional, but there's been some fun in both. So I'm Stephanie and I'm in Omaha, Nebraska. Ponca tribal lands is, you know, represented here. And then, so personally, I just had a birthday and my aunt was like, come to dinner with me and your uncle, and surprised me with like a dozen family members at a Mexican restaurant in South Omaha. So it was actually really nice. And so that was a nice, you know, occurrence. And then professionally, I got to speak on behalf of Partnership for Hope at the American Advertising Federation of Omaha's holiday party. And that was a fun experience. We're their nonprofit partner for this year. So that was fun to do. So that's a little bit for my highlights.
Oh, it's wonderful. Both of those are great. Who's up next?
I'll go next. Hello, everyone. I'm Carl. I'm based in St. Albans, which is about 20 miles outside London in England. So I'm creating the futures easternmost representative, I think, is saying. So the temperature here for December is unseasonably warm at the moment. It's 10 degrees centigrade, which I'm sorry, I can't just do the maths on that in terms of Fahrenheit. But it's not frosty yet, which it sort of normally is here. And my awesomes are both personal ones. So the first one is that my son's coming home from university this week, which my wife is especially very pleased about. And my other awesome is that we both just got our booster jabs at the weekend. So Omicron, which I still think sounds like an Avengers movie, is making its way around the country very, very quickly at the minute. So I'm feeling a bit, I'm feeling quite good that I've got my booster.
Yep. Yeah, we did the happy dance when we got ours as well. Absolutely. Who else? What's going on in your world?
I'll go next. I don't have sewage, so that's an awesome, but I do have water. So we've spent the last week getting half our kitchen ripped out because our dishwasher leaked all over the inside of our cabinets and had mold growing and all that fun stuff. So it's, as always with creating the future, I looked at, and what does this make possible? Well, I got a whole lot of sorting done because we're trying to downsize our house, get ready at some point in the future to move. So it's like, I do better if I have a deadline. So I had to get the kitchen cleaned out and sort things out and think, why did I ever think I needed 10 spatulas? But, you know, so that was a good thing and a not so good thing. The really awesome thing for me this week has been that my 9-year-old grandson, Ash, got an Apple Watch. And so every night before he goes to bed, he texts my husband and I and says, good night, Grandma and Pop, I love you. And that just makes our whole day because that is, his older brother doesn't do that, but for him, that connection is really special. And so we're very excited he has that new way to communicate.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's just wonderful. Lots of family awesomes this time, which is very cool. Who else? What's going on? Okay, let me make sure. All right, you want to just...
I guess not.
You go.
Dimitri Petropoulos from Southern Arizona, traditional lands of the Tohono O'odham people, who have been continuously farming here for 4,000 years, which is pretty awesome for the United States and anywhere in the world for that matter. My awesome is I've been working on creating a laundry room for the last like 2 months almost, I think. And, you know, it gets done in bits and pieces because of other priorities that come up. And I finished it. It was really fantastic. I finished it over the weekend. It looks great. You know, there's like new shelves and we're ready to get a new washer dryer, which is supposed to arrive this morning until the sewer backed up, in which case I had to postpone it and then put it aside until we know that it'll drain once it's in there. Otherwise, it's kind of annoying to have the bathtub fill up with unmentionable stuff as you're doing that. Anyways, that's my awesome is getting that completed. And this screen, I'm looking at all the faces and all the people and everybody on here, and this is truly awesome. So
it is awesome. It is definitely awesome. Who else? Jackie, Mark, Nora, got a whole bunch of people haven't gone.
I'll go. My name is Mark. I'm about 90 miles east of New York City in farmland, which is an issue, but because they want to go to solar farms instead of food farms. And it's a big discussion. I found out that we're on the Korchog land and I don't think there's any Korchog left. And there's only one reservation left on Long Island in Suffolk County. It's down on the South Shore in saltwater wetlands. It's the Shinnecock peoples, and they've been relegated to 800 acres that is suffering from saltwater intrusion. And we're having a much larger discussion about the front row must go and that people have to move away. Only you're moving a culture, you're moving not just people, you're moving a culture, oyster farming, kelp farming, all the things that they do. There's no hunting left for real, but what I found out was that the 800 acres is smaller than Central Park. Central Park is 840 acres. And by comparison, the Navy and Grumman Corporation had given the town 1,643 acres to do with what we wanted. And we're in the process of selling it off for $40 million right now. And it just by the scale of the scale alone, that we own 1,600 acres and an entire native population has been relegated to half of that was kind of that's my awesome this week. And they've got to move. We gave them the crap. We gave them the bad end of the stick. So I'm dealing with that on a lot of levels. Two good things are happening. We're creating a repair cafe for reusing goods and refurbishing goods on site. And we've also got a food waste to compost on farm, a couple of pilots going on right now to reduce the CO2, which is going to reduce the sea level rise, which may keep these people on their land. So that's it.
Wow. Wow. That is 2 minutes of, oh my goodness. Wow. Thank you, Mark. I mean, like for all of that, for grounding us in what's important. Beautiful. Who else?
Go. So hi, I'm Jackie Bradley. I am in Michigan on Wyandotte and Anishinaabeg lands. My awesome this month is that since we met last, I started and finished my very first knitting project. So it's a scarf. It's nothing very complicated, but it was very exciting as I kept holding it up and saying, look, it's getting longer. I'm doing something and I can see a difference happening. And all of the joy that comes with that.
Wow. Wow. You have my absolute admiration. My mother was a knitter. And for my entire life, she tried to get me to knit. And I could not do more than 3 stitches without falling apart. So, yeah. Yeah, you and Nancy will have much to talk about. Wonderful.
Hi, Nora. Go. Hi, I'm Nora Kennedy. I am in Ontario, Canada, just north of Toronto, on the territory of the Mississaugas of the Credit in this area. So I am sitting here at about 4 to 5 degrees Celsius, which again, I can't do the math, but if I look at the chat, it's probably a little about high 40s, I guess, but kind of, which is very unusual for us. And in fact, my cross-country skis, my awesome is that I've treated myself to a new pair of cross-country skis And they're sitting at my back door waiting for me to have enough snow to get out onto into the woods that are behind my house that I live on. So that it's good because it's sunny and warm, but it's not so good because I really would like to give them a go. And the other one, Jackie, I am also a new knitter. And in fact, I have my hat project here beside me because I've committed to knitting 6 hats for people for Christmas. Am I crazy? So I may be kind of resorting to it as we go because things are kind of tightening up timeline wise. My husband said it was a terrific experiment in increasing my vocabulary as I taught myself to knit. So, and perhaps not in the nicest
way. No, I was going to say not the kinds of words that we want to share publicly. That's great. That's wonderful.
So if I start to knit on this call, I'll make sure I'm muted.
Yeah. Are you a loud knitter?
We won't take it personally.
Yes, Mark, but only when I'm swearing at it because it's not doing what I want it to do.
Wonderful. Eli, Angie, Justin, hello. Who wants to pop in?
I can pop in. And then Eli's going to follow right on my footsteps because he started to unmute there. I'm Justin Pollock. I am on Nacotchtake land, which is now known as Washington, D.C. And it is an awesome, which is I, through a fluke of serendipitous events, we are going up to see my father, who lives outside of Boston, for Christmas Day. And haven't spent a Christmas holiday with him and his family for quite some time. So that's my highlight.
Awesome. That is awesome. So much family awesome. Yay. Eli, hello.
Good to see everyone. Eli here in San Bruno, California on Ramachush Ohlone land, unceded. I just looked up unceded just to make sure. And yeah, kind of jumping on the family bandwagon, I had my first Thanksgiving with my California family that I discovered through 23andMe. So we've been getting to know each other, and yeah, it was really nice to just have this family sense of family and connect with the awesome people that I'm actually related to. Another awesome is I've been kind of getting back into playing piano. I got this cool app called Simply Piano, and it's just been so amazing to actually play notes where you're sight reading and it's picking up whether you're getting the notes correctly or not on the iPad. And it was a sheer joy of just seeing it come together, you know, playing Elton John, Can You Feel the Love Tonight. I want to do this every single day. And it feels awesome. Thanks.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. I have loved watching the journey of you getting to know your family. That is just, it's just awesome. It's wonderful. Angie.
Hi, everyone. I'm Angie Eikenberry. I'm also in Omaha, Nebraska with Stephanie. And we're on Omaha and Ponca land. And my awesomes are the semester is ending. Not that I'm going to miss, you know, my classes, my students, but it's awfully nice to have the semester ending and a break ahead. And the other awesome is that I'm taking my parents who are getting a little bit more difficult to get around. We're all going to Disney World actually in a few days. So I'm desperately going to get everything ready and to go, but hopefully, yeah, fingers crossed, we're going to be all safe, but we've made these plans so long ago. We're going with it, and we're going to try to make it as awesome as it can be.
Oh, that's wonderful. That is wonderful. This is the perfect time of year to go to Disney. Between Thanksgiving and Christmas, there's nobody there. So there's nobody there. So everybody go. go enjoy Disney World. Oh, that's wonderful, Angie. That's great. That's great. I am Hilde Gottlieb. I am in Tucson, Arizona, sitting next to the guy who doesn't look like he's sitting next to me, but Dimitri is right over there. If you're if you get confused when we go on and off of mic, we are in Tucson, Arizona, which is maybe not technically unceded, but is the unceded lands of the Tana Awesome. I'm always unceded has a legal definition of were there treaties, but treaties with Native Americans were, I'm going to say overwhelmingly, if not entirely, so one-sided and so unfair that none of these lands were ceded with blessings, with gifts. And so just the ability to remember that we are sitting on lands that were taken, that were stolen, and the importance of recognizing that and how that perpetuates in so many of the actions that we continue to take, not just with Indigenous folks, but with each other. So I appreciate all of you sharing that. My awesome is a neighbor awesome. I have a neighbor down the street that has chickens and ducks, and so we always save our egg cartons for them and just bring, you know, a dozen or so down the street. And the other day, she and her two kids, who I'm going to say are maybe 5 and 7, no teeth in the bottom, all he wants for Christmas is his 2 front teeth, came by with a Christmas card for me, a candy cane, and a half dozen duck eggs. And so I have been having duck eggs, and it has just been, just each time I crack one open, it is just this little gift from my neighbor of just what it feels like to be sharing the stuff that we have. So that is my awesome. It's a tiny little thing that every time I've got 3 awesomes left. I've eaten 3 of my awesomes, and I've got 3 awesomes left. But it's been pretty delightful. So, and as Dimitri said, it is awesome to see all of your faces here today. Missing those who can't be with us yet. So we're going to start where we always start, just noting that catalytic thinking is going to guide our conversation today. We are continuing to talk about what we're loosely now calling succession planning, what started out definitively as succession planning. And we've been talking about it as continuity planning, which has been a delicious shift in the conversation. I want to put a couple of links in the chat. Let me do that right now. I like to wait until everyone is here, because at least the way Zoom used to work, if you weren't here, you couldn't see what was in the chat before you got here.
While Hildy's doing that, I wanted to mention to the knitters, the first time I encountered a flock of knitters was we were in New Zealand, this was 10, 12 years ago, and presenting at a group of about 20 consultants. And at one point, Hildy was presenting for an entire week.
We were doing immersion. We were doing our week-long, in those days, in-person immersion.
And as we're sitting there and they're working, all of a sudden, a whole bunch of the women pull out yarn and just start knitting. And, you know, they're looking down and whatever, but boy, they were clearly paying attention, because at any time there was a comment or a question asked, immediately asked it, went right back to their knitting. So I'm honored to be amongst knitters here today.
Well, one of the brain science things is that we actually can sometimes think more clearly and think through stuff that's been causing us problems when we are doing something physical. I find if I'm at a stumbling block in my writing, I go for a walk, I'm not 2 houses down and I'm already dictating. And so that kinesthetic link to our brains is very, very real. So if y'all are knitting, go. So long as you're not like pacing around the room, because we'll get dizzy. But for those who can't think when you're sitting still, that's why. We do actually think better when we're engaging everything about our bodies. We were not meant to be sedentary creatures. We were meant to be roaming around and walking around and doing things, and that is how our brains work best. So So yeah, the links that I put in the chat are linked to supports for catalytic thinking. And so what I want to do right now is just remind folks what catalytic thinking looks like. These are the questions that we ask in catalytic thinking. We start with who will be affected by any action that we take. We look at what we want the positive outcome for them to be, what the values are that we want to embody. And then grounded from what we are learning, we reach for what is possible. Grounded in what you learn, what is the highest potential outcome for each of those parties? And from there, there are additional questions, which we will start getting a little bit into today. In order for that high potential outcome to be reality, what conditions would need to be in place? What would people need to feel and have and know? And so I just wanted to share that with y'all. And you'll see, there we go. You'll see that in the chat if you need prompts, if you need some, now where are we? What we find is that we frequently, when a situation arises, just react to that situation. And so if this were the normal succession planning, somebody might be leaving, we must replace the somebody. And what instead of reacting, what we're doing is creating what is possible. It is a practice in creating what is possible and creating a future that has not existed, a future that is different than our past. So I just wanted to ground everybody in that is the practice that we are going to be following here. Quick summary of where we have been so far following catalytic thinking. We did talk about who all would be affected by whatever we're doing. We came up with a huge list, narrowing it down a little bit. We talked about board and existing staff and teams and fellows and people who are actively participating with creating the future. We certainly talked about the community and benefactors of the services that an organization provides. We talked about the fact that it would impact the people who are leaving. Or who might be leaving, or who we want to be sure we are creating transition for in case they leave. When we talked about it as creating the future, we talked about if Hildy and Dimitri left, what would that mean for the two of us? And then lastly, for new people coming on, new people coming into, whether it is the new person that might take somebody's place, or a whole group of new people, what does succession planning make possible for all of them? We've spent a lot of time last time looking at a couple of those folks who will be affected and asking about what this process could make possible for them. Probably the most significant that everyone has commented on was as we talked about what succession planning can make possible for our communities is continuity of our mission. And thinking about succession as one piece of continuity of mission just shifts everything. It's not the end, it's a piece of what we're really aiming for, which is being able to continue to serve the mission, which is pretty exciting. We also talked about what succession planning makes possible for board and staff and teams and people who are intimately connected to an organization. We talked about it creating a sense of calm and alleviating fear. We talked about knowing what to expect during a transition and after. We talked a lot about codifying culture and creating systems so that everybody's on the same page. And I loved, as I looked through my notes, someone had mentioned that sense of calm is a sense of, we've got this. And I think we all look for that when change happens because we don't deal with change well. And just a sense of, we can breathe, we've got this. And for the founders or the people leaving, very, very similarly, confidence that stuff will be handled, that it's okay to go, that whole sense of calm and that whole sense of we've got this is we've got this, Sort of like when your kids leave home and they say, "Don't worry, Mom, we got this. We can go. You can get out of our lives now." And so we've talked a lot about those pieces. Is there anything that you all would add to the summary of where we've been so far that I haven't touched upon before we dive into what's next? Okay, I see a lot of head shaking. Couple things that there's one group that we still need to reach for what is possible. And Jackie mentioned this at the very, very end of our last conversation. And hopefully Jackie's gonna join in the conversation a little bit more today, because we always appreciate your insights so much. And I know that you are here feverishly taking the most fabulous notes that we get to refer back to. But your observations are always just so wonderful. So I'm looking forward to your participation today. But Jackie mentioned this at the end of our last meeting during our reflections. And then during a meeting in the interim, Angie mentioned very, very similarly, stepping into a new situation. What does succession planning, continuity planning, make possible for the new people stepping in? For whether it is somebody new stepping into a role or a group of new people, we've seen so often where an organization may fundraise, they may get a grant, and they suddenly hire 10 new people. What does succession planning make possible for the folks that are stepping into a role? And that is where we will start today.
One of the things that often happens is there is we talk about continuity of mission. There's often a sort of an urge or the feeling that a new regime must change everything coming in. And, sometimes that's good. Usually it's not. And what the succession planning would do is it would set a roadmap of continuity for the new people coming in that they don't feel the obligation to put, quote, their stamp on. I mean, we've worked with organizations in the past where it's my term, I'm the new president of the organization, and all the stuff that happened before, well, we don't need to worry about that. We're gonna do what my term, is. And then the new person comes in 2 years later, and this is organizations that cycle through presidents, but it's the same idea that, coming in and they must put their stamp on the organization. This will allow that, but also keep a continuity of mission and the integrity of the organization and whatever, and so on and so forth. So,
absolutely. Nora.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was reading in another leadership book that I work with in a values capacity a little while ago that talked about that an organization with a healthy organizational culture will promote from within in terms of succession, and that if there is an unhealthy organizational culture, most often will hire from outside, because the desire then is to change the culture and to bring somebody completely new in to shake it up. And we see signs of that all the time, right? When a corporation is tanking, they'll bring somebody new in, fire everybody, and start from scratch. But if it's a good continuity or succession plan piece, I think what it does is it allows the person coming in to come into an organization which has strong fundamental core organizational values and culture, and then allows them to build on that with whatever their vision or direction is. But the security of the foundation is there, which gives them the freedom to not have to come in and clean up all the mess, that's in place already, they can then start to figure out, okay, how, what's my pathway to the mission?
Wonderful. Wow. Wow. We've also seen that as an attractant to new people. I'm thinking of one organization in particular where the part of the job description that was posted included upholding the values with a link to the values. And the applicants almost universally noted that they were so impressed and that they wanted to work for an organization that it was that important that they were putting that forward. So, thank you for bringing that up, Nora. It's huge. What else? What does solid succession readiness, planning, continuity make possible for new people coming in?
I think the word that keeps getting stuck in my head that I can't get rid of is expectations, and how that links to the higher outcome that is possible that you're envisioning for the organization. And so, I mean, that being said, it's not just expectations of the role, it's expectations of upholding the mission and the vision of the organization. So I think it's really like, you know, somebody coming into that spot would know, okay, yes, my role is important. And yes, what I do will further the mission, but the mission is this, the vision is this, and that's not going to be taken away as an expectation just because I'm a new leader within it. I think that's what is just kind of ringing in my head right now.
Big, yeah. What else for that new person stepping in?
Hilde, I'm just thinking as we're talking, I love what we've talked about so far, you know, some of those expectations and what can happen, but how do we leave that door open for them to also know that, excuse me, that they will get to create? Like we talked last time about, we don't want same old, those of us who are leaders of organizations, we know the parts that are super important to hang on to. History, I think they should always honor history of your organization. I think that they need the mission, the values. I mean, those are the solid pieces. But do we frame it in a way that they also go, oh, this is amazing. This is all that I'm passionate about, but they want me to take it to another level. That's the only piece I'm not sure how we do that, but I know for the people that I want to come behind me one day, I want them to know they're gonna take this in ways that I never even imagined, just like I got to with the creators of it, you know?
Yes, very much so. Yeah.
Yeah, I think building on what Stephanie and Donna said, I think really sort of separating out the culture and, you know, the focus of the work, and then maybe like the how the work gets done. And maybe there's some other things that we could pull out as well. And really being clear about, okay, like, you know, these things are sort of set in this part, but in this part, or these within this part, these things are set. And there's then other parts that are, you know, available for interpretation and evolution and creating and growing, you know, in each of these buckets, here's sort of what we hold true as we want to keep the same. And here's some of the things that are available for changing or, you know, evolving or something, you know, I don't think we could even ever do it in that concrete a way, but in some sort of way to express that to people that, you know, it's not like a blank slate. Obviously, there's a lot that's there. There's a lot of things that we don't want to keep doing the same, but there's a lot of things that we, you know, we want to either hold on to or sort of hold on to the vision of, even if the actual exact work isn't staying the same, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
In my mind, the thing that's important there is the why. So why are things being done this way, and making that connection and making that explicit, and then trusting the new person coming in to understand that and hold on to those pieces that need to remain, and maybe filling in a new why for some of those pieces that are flexible, but making it clear what the reason was and then trusting their judgment with that knowledge.
Beautiful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that the why is sacred. The what and the how are up to you. Yeah. Beautiful. There's an old expression. I wish I could remember it succinctly. It's a Zen adage about providing a really wide fence for your sheep. Give them boundaries, give them parameters, but let them roam wherever they want within those boundaries. I wish I had it more succinctly in front of me, but it's really bringing that up for me. Anything else that as a new person, think of yourself as a new person stepping into something new that we've all done, a new role. Could be a new role even in an organization we're already in. As Nora was talking about, you know, hiring from within, you're still stepping into a whole new role, a new relationship, maybe with a board, with colleagues. What does good look like?
Hildy, another one that just came to my mind is what good would look like for me is that someone has helped me bridge to all the people. So whether it's staff, donors, all stakeholders that before you ever came into this, if you were pretty sure this is where you wanted to be, that somebody was doing some bridging there and you knew that was going to happen.
And what does that bridging make possible for that new person?
To me, it's everything with what we do because we're all about relationships. I can't imagine without it. What it makes possible is a comfort. Again, kind of going back to someone being able to go. I was just talking to a young friend who has left one nonprofit into another as now is fund development. And I said, how's that going? And he said, well, and I said, did they have even a list of their previous donors for you? And he said, absolutely nothing. You know, and so it's the relationships. What it makes possible is a comfort level for you to do what you do well, because you can take it from there if somebody makes that warm intro.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah. Beautiful. Eli.
Yeah, it's been said in some way or shape, but I'm just thinking about like lowered stress levels. And that's so crucial to perform. You know, in my company, we've got somebody who does the morning shift. She's an incredible dedicated employee, but she has a really hard time letting go of stuff and putting it down to be handed off to other people. So I think, you know, she works 14-hour days because of this maybe inability to just release and hand off. So I think if that's been done well, then people know that even if I'm not here for some reason, it's all taken care of. So that, you know, sense of calm and, you know, the minimization of stress can be great for the organization.
Oh yeah, thanks. Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah. Justin.
So one of the things I always think about with transition, I think for any role, it's what I coined the snowball effect, which is somebody leaves and basically the work begins to build up. And then whoever steps in is just literally, maybe I should call it the avalanche effect, because it's literally like not only are they having to learn how to do the job, but they're also catching up on all of the past work that has piled up. So, you know, if we're thinking about what a continuity plan looks like that is beneficial to someone coming in, there are mechanisms to manage that the organization actually, you know, again, it's sort of the, you know, everyone's essential, but no one's critical, to sort of this idea that work progresses even in the absence of whomever is transitioning out of the organization. And or it is moderated in terms of how it comes back into play as someone is onboarded.
That's huge. Oh, good, you're finally here. Yeah, yeah. Wow. Anything else that good would look like for that new person? That the planning can make possible for that new person? Yeah, Stephanie.
I was just going to piggyback a little bit off of what Donna was talking about with comfort level and the stakeholders and all of the people connected to the organization. I think it goes even a step beyond comfort, though. I think it goes to the credibility of the organization. Because if you're not doing a handoff to a funder and, you know, the new person is stepping in and calling and saying, hey, I know you don't know me, but I'm the new person, then there's a amount of credibility that is lost on behalf of the organization if that transition isn't happening in a way that's professional and, you know, upholding those relationships that people have worked so hard to build in the community. So I think that is part of a part of it is what I was just thinking when Donna was talking about that.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and none of us like to cold call anybody. And that's what you so often wind up doing. That's what that handoff, I love that handoff, Donna. That's what that makes possible, is that you're not feeling like you have to cold call somebody. Yeah, Nora.
I'm really curious about the handoff sort of concept. And I'm thinking in terms of like at the executive director, CEO level. Because sometimes I think it's a really great idea and sometimes I think it's a really bad idea. So I'm just really curious about when it's, so for example, when I was hired into my current role 15 plus years ago now, the founding CEO of my organization after 20 years had left. She was replaced by another director who came on board and did an overlap with her. And then 5 months later, she was fired because she was a disaster. And I've always said she's the best thing that ever happened to my leadership, because by comparison, I was brilliant, right? Because she was so bad. but then there was a 6-month gap before they hired or recruited me into the position. And I always said, had I done that overlap with the previous founder, I think I wouldn't have lasted, because my style and hers were so vastly different that she would have driven me crazy in that few weeks of overlap. However, on the flip side, building that into a continuity plan, which is something I'm actually working on right now with an internal, one of my current directors. So I go back and forth, because I think I want to do this really consistently. We have a bit of a plan where she moves into an associate director role. We kind of work together. And yet I'm also very aware that I'm not 100% sure that you shouldn't just get out of her way and let her take it on. So I'm just curious about other people's thoughts around that. Does it get in the way, or does it help?
One of the things that we are going to talk about that. We're absolutely going to talk about that. One of the things that you'll notice when Donna mentioned the action of creating that bridge, I asked her, and this is a catalytic thinking practice thing, I asked her what that bridge would make possible so that we could aim at what that makes possible. We'll talk, because the bridge, the action, is actually a step towards what we really want. And what we really want is that comfort level, that not having to cold call, the having the list of who the donors are even. And so just as a practice, you know, Hilde going into teacher mode, as a practice piece, when we're looking at that high potential outcome, we're always sort of looking to raise it up. And if we hear doing sorts of things, because our brains are doing, you know, I mean, that's where we go. That's where we all go. Having the ritual, the practice of saying, oh yeah, okay, so now what would that thing make possible? And the real focus is having that comfort level that I don't need to cold call 6 donors that are intimidating me, that I don't know these people. What are they gonna say? How are they gonna, that comfort level is really what that outcome is. A bridge, creating a bridge of some sort is one way of probably many of getting to that comfort level. So just, you know, doing the catalytic thinking thing, because I know many of you are in a cohort that are learning right now. It just an indicator for you, if you're in that place of talking about what is the best possible result, and somebody says we could do, that's a trigger for you to say, and if you did that, what would that make possible? Just to raise that conversation up, because otherwise we go right into doing, and how would you do it? And I don't know, and who would do it? That doesn't feel right. I don't know. It feels really good to me. We want to keep that conversation as high as we can for as long as we can. One of the interesting things, again, about how the human brain works, we will naturally make a conversation narrower and more doing. And that's just, you know, we're doing creatures. That's how we survive. And so it's why we have to keep moving, keeping an eye on it and lifting the conversation up to ask, okay, what would the result be? Just as a quick aside, if you ever get into conversations where it's going down some rabbit hole and everybody's going, and it just feels crappy all of a sudden, if you just start asking one of those, what would the result be? What could that make possible? You'll find that it lifts the energy and the energy and attention in the room. It comes right back up. It comes out of the weeds. So lesson over. Andrew.
No, thank you for bringing that up, because that actually changed a little bit of what I was going to say. I think one thing it could do, and this has sort of been talked about, I think talked around, is, you know, allow the new person to ease into the role. So that they can actually be their best. You know, Justin mentioned the avalanche, and that is a way for them to make sure that no one is ever at their best, right? If they walk into a growing pile of stuff that's just overtakes them from day one.
Yes.
So I think that is an important thing. And the other thing that I've been thinking about is sort of the, I don't know how this exactly fits in, but, you know, how we structure all of this in, you know, the conversations that we have during these kinds of processes, and how we explain different parts of the organization actually affects who is interested in the role and who maybe applies for the role and who interviews for the role and who we interview for the role and who accepts the role and what kind of person we end up with. And so I think, you know, I'm sort of thinking about like, oh, like if in previous, you know, roles that I had, if we had done some of these things in a way that was more focused on the outcomes and not just sort of reacting, would we have gotten different people? And would they, you know, not only would they have had a better opportunity to succeed, but would they actually have been different people? So that's just something that's also floating around.
Huge, huge.
Can I jump in on that one? Because I was thinking about that what it makes possible to have this is that more opportunity for people to be engaged and involved. It's not just the one, you know, superstar who's doing 14 hours a week or 14 hours a day, you know, and that's, you know, leading to burnout, so on, but that it makes possible that more people can participate and then hopefully that means more sustainability and better outcomes.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And we had talked before last time about making possible in general co-creation, that whole sense of if everyone is getting together and figuring out what continuity looks like, everybody's got a stake in supporting that new person coming in. I really, really like that, Angie. Yeah. Eli, I know that you need to leave early today, and I want to make sure that you've got a moment to just share any thoughts, any reflections before you go.
You know, just thinking about how, I think it's called the 5 P's, you know, practice, preparation. It's so meaningful when you're creating something scalable that lives beyond you. We are now at 13 people, and it's getting incredibly complex. And we're spending a lot of time going going into ClickUp and creating all of these processes, you know, but what I just did a few minutes ago is I took the catalytic thinking questions and realized that that needs to be part of our planning and our kind of like thinking beyond the process. It's like, how will we treat each other and how will we hand this off to the next cohort, the next generation of our team members? So yes, we do more and better when we're prepared. So this has been really helpful, and I hope all of you will continue to develop that conversation. And thanks for having me as usual.
Absolutely, absolutely. And listen in to the second half of the conversation when the recording gets posted, because your brain will probably think of more things too.
Absolutely. Thanks, everyone.
So glad you could be here, Eli.
Take care.
Eli.
Bye-bye.
So what we're really talking about is that sense of comfort when you step into that new position. Less fear, more calm, the same things that we were talking about for the staff who will be there is for that new person. Because that, you know, it's interesting. All of the other people who will be in an organization are all a little bit nervous about the new guy. What's going to change? What's going to matter for me? But they have each other, you know. And again, Donna, talking about the relationships, they have each other. That new person walking in doesn't. They're new, and so through that lens of, oh my gosh, I don't know anybody. How many of us know people who took on new positions during COVID? Did not get an opportunity to bond with anybody, meet anybody in person, be part of a team. You know, for some of you, that was your story. And I know some of you. what can planning, what can any kind of process make possible? Thinking through that lens of that person who's walking in and they're walking in cold.
I might, oh, go ahead, Dimitri.
Save some of this for later on reflection, but it's relative to your question, Kelly. And that is, you know, Jacqueline's why. Why are we here? Why are we doing this? And I was thinking about Donna's, you know, we don't want to so narrow the options for a person coming in that they can't be themselves, that they must follow an exact script in terms of what they're doing. So, you know, part of what this does for the person coming in is it gives them a clearer direction as to where they could possibly go. And the why gives them that, the framework gives them the connections with everybody, be they a book, an address book with all of the donors and, you know, their favorite ice cream flavor or, you know, whatever it is that makes it easy for them from that perspective, is it gives them a framework coming in that provides, you know, it was Suzuki, by the way, Hildy, who had the quote about the big field, you know, that in order to control the sheep, give them a really big field to graze in. So, you know, people are sort of the same way, give them lots of opportunity to be creative and express themselves, but there's still boundaries as to where they can go.
Carl, and then Justin.
You're muted, Carl.
No, he's not. I think it's me.
I see.
Sorry, it was me. I thought taking my hand down would also automatically unmute me. So I guess my observation is, I wonder what planning enables is the incoming person to not feel a sense of paralysis. And the reason that I suggest that is that, and I have no data on this, but I wonder how many new whether it's executive directors, as you call them, or chief execs, as we call them, if they come in and within a few weeks, their immediate sort of thought is, oh my God, what have I done? There is so much that sort of needs sorting out. And, you know, we probably all have a little bit of experience of like the trustees or the board not knowing 10% of what's going on in their own sort of organization. I guess what I also just sort of wanted to add, though, is I wonder, much as it's useful to think about what does it enable, I also wonder if we just have to think about also what are the limitations of it as well, because you quite rightly mentioned COVID just before. And, you know, what's that point about all plans fail at the first point of contact with the enemy? I think was the military expression anyway. And I guess I'm just sort of thinking aloud that you not only have to plan, for the things that are on your risk register that you know are a problem to help people, but as part of the planning, you also have to try and make people sort of focus a little bit on the black swans. And COVID was a classic black swan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's interesting as we talk about the conditions that need to be in place for these results to happen. There's one of the questions I always like asking is those exact questions, Carl. What about the stuff that comes out of nowhere? You know, in the event that, you know, you all have heard me talk ad nauseum about using catalytic thinking to get my mom to create a plan for her last years. And we aimed at what she said was going, what good would look like. And that was going to be that she lived as independently as she could for as long as she could. And my next question was, okay, so what happens? So what will make sure you can live the way you want to live if, for example, you can no longer drive? What will allow you to live as independently as possible if you get sick? And so having those conversations, I think there's something really critical, Carl, about having those conversations about, and you know, put it bluntly, what if shit happens? And because life isn't always rosy. Sorry, guys, I didn't know if you knew that or not. But life isn't always rosy. Sometimes COVID happens. Sometimes other stuff happens. So yeah, that's huge, Carl. Thank you, Justin.
Well, so I, you know, my first response was when you said someone comes in cold, and my first response is a good plan that would never happen. There would never be a notion of someone coming in cold. And I think that to Carl's point, you know, this is, I think, a condition of an effective continuity plan, but transparency. There aren't hidden things. You know, if we want a strong transition, you can't hide things from people and then expect them to either fix them or have to deal with them. Or, you know, if you're afraid you're going to scare people away, chances are you're going to scare people away. You know, you're going to have people whose tenure is not long or is difficult. So I would say, you know, that for the person transitioning in, you know, with sort of, you know, reasonable parameters, but there's no surprise. There is no, you know, surprise black swan. It's just there is a black swan and they know about it. They're informed prior to them actually making an acceptance of the job. Because I think that's the other thing that happens is we kind of bait and switch. I mean, it's an unfortunate, I see Donna smiling there. But, you know, someone should know all of that prior to making an agreement. And I think it does touch to a bigger question, which is for strong continuity, there has to be just stronger organizational transparency to the world. Because oftentimes we're afraid to say something because we don't want the world to know, not just the candidate. It's just, but we should be in a position where it's reasonable for someone to know. And in that courting process, they learn.
Yeah.
Yeah. The good, the bad, the beautiful, the ugly.
Yep. Carl, did you have something or did you?
Yeah, so what Justin was just making me think, as he always does, is that it enables the board to potentially emerge from their own self-denial about what the situation is in the organization. So this is not just about the potential candidates coming in, it's about the boards sort of coming in. And I guess I say that because I've had too many friends in the sector who've taken on executive roles where they went in with a change agenda and then the trustees said, yes, we really want that. And then actually they realized that they didn't want it. And I think that's because there hadn't been that process where they had to go through and maybe this sort of what we're talking about would sort of facilitate that, but they hadn't gone through that process of like being clear enough with themselves about what do they actually want.
Huge.
Now that one makes me think about this. So I love this. I love this. So I'm going, so continuity, it's not just about executive director continuity, it's about board continuity. And so now I'm going, this is what we do. If I find a new person that I think would be great on a board, there is nothing I do except invite them to a board meeting like you all do, so that they get to just have an experience with one another. There is no conversation about becoming a board member at that point, but learning. And then going back to what Carl was saying, that awareness of self-denial, then pulling out again and having an actual meeting with just that person with the board to have candid conversation. I mean, this is all part of the continuity. I mean, and I really hadn't been thinking about that. So this is cool.
As we are moving here, it feels like we are getting into the point where we can talk about what are the conditions that need to be in place for these to be the realities. And let's start where we have been talking. For that new person to feel like they don't have to climb Mount Everest every day, and we're never told that there is a mountain there. For that person to feel supported, comfortable, introduced, for them to feel solidly what their parameters are, where the why is, what the true north is, what the values are, what the vision and the mission are, what is important, where they have flexibility, where they don't. For that to be the sense for that person, what needs to be in place? What does that person need to know? What do they need to have?
Honesty is the first thing that came to my head. All of us involved in bringing that person forward, it's just got to be authentic and honest. We need to start there. We can't even begin this process without that, with a new person.
Yes, and who needs to be honest? And let's start with who needs to be honest and about what?
So we're a small organization. So to me, it's staff, which is very small, board, which is very small. It might actually have to be created within the staff and board to make sure the honesty is really there to begin with. That's the starting place. I mean, they're all the other stakeholders, yes, too, but that's going to be a little bit different. I'm not sure how yet.
Stephanie.
The whole time I'm listening, I'm just thinking about my public human resources class and, you know, other, what, you know, just other stuff. And I'm just wondering, like, you know, it's really hard to keep accountability in place or to keep procedures going correctly if you're not like having those accurate policies and procedures written up and shared in the first place. And is that too off the road here? I'm not sure, but this is where my mind was going. Because, you know, if Joe Schmo is, you know, being honest with, you know, Henry, the new person or whatever, but it's not in writing or there's nothing that can be gone back to say, hey, you told me this was the case and now I'm going to the board and the board saying that's not the case. You know, it's like, what are those formal pieces? And I think sometimes, especially grassroots organizations, they lose sight of some of those formalities. Like they get into this flow of meeting and they get into this like I'm from a working board, for instance. A lot of us do a lot of the work, you know, that other people would have outsourced or whatever. And so, you know, we don't always have all that stuff in writing, but I'm wondering like how much is necessary that should be to make sure that continuity is not only like brought forward, but also held accountable to. So.
Yeah, it's interesting having stuff in writing to touch back to, especially the core values, the things that are sacred. But also I think there's something important in knowing what is already there in writing sometimes, which has been there for 30 years, nobody's looked at and somebody suddenly touches on. My favorite set of bylaws I ever saw, this was not in the year 1850, this was in the year like 2010. It said that legal notice of any portion of the bylaws was by certified mail, fax, or telegraph. So, you know, I think that there's a really important piece there, Stephanie, in terms of not only having in writing the stuff that is sacred, but also knowing, you know, several of you have mentioned, Justin, you mentioned, you know, knowing where the skeletons are. You know, oh yeah, there's this skeleton of this policy that says X. Maybe we should do something about that. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Nora.
I was just thinking back to the whole concept of continuity versus the specific succession piece. And I think that when I think of what else needs to be in place to make that successful, it's the team around the person coming in. So knowing that you've got the right people in the other roles who are who understand the mission, who understand the day-to-day pieces, that know how to do their job, and that are committed to supporting whoever it is that's coming into the new role, so that's sort of already in place and focused on, and that is part of the ongoing succession plan for the prior year or two before that comes into place, so that you're working with. So in my case, I have 8 managers, and working with who's going to be that core group, they're still going to be here after I go, after a couple of the other managers retire off, who's going to be left? Who are the core people who are going to be there that know that history and know the day-to-day business and have those relationships so that they can support the person who's coming into the role?
Absolutely. Great. Yeah. What else? What does that new person need to have? What do they need to know? What do they need to be assured of?
I guess I would respond a little bit to Andrew's question that he put in the chat around sort of knowing everything about everything. But I think, you know, some of the things that have been talked about in terms of the values, the why, even structural design elements of the organization, you know, just process type things, oftentimes just aren't codified in an organization. So I think that, you know, where do I look? Where are those sort of foundational documents that help codify the why, the culture, the values, the approach, you know, sort of all those different elements. You know, and then what other kind of evaluative tools are just out there that the organization's using that have feedback? So if someone's coming in, they can sort of see, oh, you know, here's all of our program performance feedback so that we can at least see if we're effective. You know, so I think it's sort of, you know, if it exists, there's access to all of that feedback, both the benchmarking foundational stuff as well as then whatever feedback mechanisms. And if those don't exist, and since we're projecting what effective would look like, they would exist. there would be something that could give assurances about effectiveness and efficacy of the organization. And actually, I would also say, you know, we're talking a lot about the organization, but there's a big piece about how we get to know the other people beyond just the, like, meet them all. Like, is there some other mechanism that we have for getting a sense of, you know, who is this organization in terms of the people we are organizing together? And that's board, that's staff, that's core volunteers and partnership kind of things. And I think Donna touched on that about sort of knowing, like, who do I need to know? But I don't know that we were that explicit about the intentionality of getting to know the people who are already embedded inside the organization.
I've seen one, it was a consulting firm, a private firm. They did stuff that was, it felt magical. It was just remarkable along those lines. They each had an introduction to me. So it was like a one sheeter or a two sheeter of, this is stuff you might want to know about me. When I'm hungry, I'm grumpy. Those kinds of things. that I think they called it like a user manual for me. And it was just remarkable. And then when a new person came into the team, it was the job of each existing person to take that person to lunch and to one-on-one get to know that person. So it wasn't the job of the new person to say, because that's so frequently what it is. You're really making me think about this, Justin. It wasn't the job of the new person to say, hey, can we go to lunch? I meant to feel that maybe I'm stepping into something. No, it was the job of the people that were already there to ask the new person, each one. By the end of the month, each of you has taken Mary to lunch and has talked about just the stuff and your observations and stuff. The condition being those mechanisms of getting to know people as people, really, really important. Stephanie, I think you had something.
Yeah, I mean, that was just a flashback back to my first semester of the MPA program. I was in organizational theory and behavior, and we were talking about organizational culture. And I think that speaks to kind of what you were talking about, Justin, how do you get to know the organization and the culture of that organization? And I think something else that the organization itself needs to be asking is, are we getting someone that fits within our organizational culture? Because we read this article, for instance, who brought Bernadine Healy down? And that was, you know, case way back of, you know, American Red Cross person that came in as a CEO of the American Red Cross. And it wasn't to her problems or her issues. It wasn't really her fault. It was that she didn't fit into the organizational culture of the organization. And so she could have been doing the best and the greatest work, but because that fit of her in the organization didn't align, she failed. And so I think, you know, if you're going to have somebody so high up in the organization as the head leader, the CEO, the executive director, what is that board or that, you know, decision-making committee or whoever that is deciding who this person is doing to make sure that the person that they're bringing on board fits within that organizational culture of the organization? Because organization culture can go everywhere from decision-making processes and who is making the key decisions to down to, you know, how we greet the clients. You know, it's very much like the blood and the, you know, the adrenaline of the organization. And if you don't fit into it, it's not going to work anyway.
Yeah, wonderful. Nancy.
Well, tying in with what we've already been discussing about having the mechanisms in place for someone to have the history, the information about the organization, what the expectations are, the first thing I wrote down is support. Who has their back? And then that they are given the time to build those relationships. Because I've seen too many executives thrown into organizations and it's the avalanche. There's no time to build relationships. There's no warm handoff. And they don't know whether the people hiring them have their back or not, because they don't have a relationship yet. And so what will it take to build that into that continuity planning to make sure that the person, the new person or people coming in, have the support that they need within and without that structure?
Yeah. Andrew?
Yeah, I could not agree more with that, Nancy. And I think it also goes back to what was said about, you know, the black swans and those kinds of things, and actually building in time to be able to deal with that stuff, right? Not accounting for 100% of the person's time without leaving space for the things that are unexpected, unknown, that will come up, in addition to all the things that are known and that, you know, that we want them to do and want things to go and all that. And the other thing I would say was a corollary to that is, you know, the avalanche that Justin mentioned before, you know, are there ways where that some of that work can be triaged in the interim before that person comes on, so they're not stepping into, you know, a 100-foot mountain? Maybe it's only a 50-foot mountain or a 35-foot mountain.
Mm-hmm. Dimitri.
Nancy, your comment and Andrew's comment is making me think about the U of A, University of Arizona football team. And they had the worst season they've ever had, you know, 1 out of 11 wins. They had a brand new coach who came in this year. And as the season was nearing the end and they hadn't won a game, a lot of folks were saying, well, we should get a new coach. And I'm thinking about the time component. You know, that particular role of a coach is to develop other people, is to create teamwork, is to create machine, but it's really a group that works together seamlessly. And that doesn't happen overnight. And so it makes me think about who's got your back. You know, a new coach comes in, the regents make the decision, whoever made the decision to bring this particular coach in, need to let that coach know that however long it takes, you know, there is going to be a period of time where they will support this person regardless of the wins, which is really, you know, the litmus test for a coach is, you know, are they winning or not? So it just really makes me reflect on the importance of that, having your back, because otherwise then this person's going to start making reactive, poor decisions because they, you know, oh, I've got to win the next game. I got to do, you know, whatever, as opposed to what's the long-term that we're doing here and where we're going with it.
Yeah, really.
Hildy, you know, now it's making me think this. So in our beginning conversations, when we first started talking about succession planning, many of us are of age where we are looking for our successors, for things we are passionate about that we want to see continue on. But we quickly got to this continuity idea. And doesn't it make sense for all organizations to begin at the beginning with continuity? And so it's an interesting conversation because my mind is going with our conversation today in a more urgent, but I'm not in an urgent situation, but I know Nora has shared, you know, that she is getting real close and she's working on this right now. We're trying to make a plan for it, but it really needed to start from the very beginning. So are we creating an urgent plan or are we doing both? Are we creating the time? And so thank you for the word time, because that is what's left out of so many things that we all do, is actually taking the time to develop something that any organization can glom onto and go, oh my gosh, why would we not start from the beginning with this? And even if we're in the middle of whatever we're in, could we backtrack? Yes. But could we also get new systems looking at it from the beginning with what we come up with?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and that goes back to not so much what are the conditions for the new person. It is part of that, but it is really the what are the conditions for everyone? What are the conditions for continuity, period? What needs to be in place for there to be continuity of mission, period, not just for the new person. So let's go there. Actually, I want to hold off on going there because I want to go a little bit deeper into a couple of the things that you all mentioned. The whole issue of having support and knowing who has their back, what needs to be in place for that?
Trust.
Mm-hmm. And trust by whom, for what?
It's hard because if you're going in fresh into a new organization, it takes time to build that trust between, and again, I'm looking at the executive director level, trust between the ED and the board, but also trust between the staff or managers and the ED. So it goes in all directions. But it can't have, that doesn't happen overnight. That has to be developed. Okay. But to feel truly supported, or to be, feel truly that this group of people that you've only met in a few interview situations truly have your back, that's going to take a while to develop that. So there also has to be a little bit of a leap of faith that you're jumping into a situation where people are gonna count you.
Yeah, Andrew, and then Mark.
Yeah, I would almost say to that, you know, we've been talking about time in a way of allowing people to make time when they're in the role, but maybe there's something to the idea of the, you know, to build that trust, to build, you know, to figure out who has your back, that the process of from when you meet the organization till when you are hired or you start in the role, there's more time so that there is an opportunity. So this was less of a leap of faith and people really know what they're getting into from all sides. And, you know, there's some limitations to that, I'm sure, practically and other issues, but just sort of rethinking that process.
Yeah, what y'all are talking about is operating at a more human pace. You know, we operate at a business pace, you know, get it done. It's got to keep, you know, okay, we hired you, you're in now, when can you start? And what you're really talking about is what needs to be in place for that humanity to be present. Yeah. Dimitri and then Nora.
I'm thinking about trust, and if we're talking at the ED board level, Carl posted a thing in the chat about a manual for the for an individual. This is my operating manual, and so often there is this sort of mystique around the board. You know, you're coming in and going to be hired by these individuals, and Joe has a frown on his face. You know, if Joe had an operating manual, you would know that Joe has a back problem. And if he sits in that chair for more than 10 minutes, his back hurts. So he's in pain, but has nothing to do with them not liking you coming into it. So I think the transparency is a big part of building trust because of assumptions that are made based on incorrect information that the incorrect information is so often I'm at fault, there's something wrong with me, they don't like me, as opposed to, no, there's other factors here that are going on. So I think that the transparency thing is really, really important toward building trust. It also, transparency also talks to the organization being an example of other organizations and being able to identify other organizations who share the same values or share the same goal or share the whatever. So it opens you up to the community at the same time as it opens up the organization to itself. And so I think that makes it stronger overall.
Nora and then Mark.
Just going back to the comment I think I made right off the top around healthy organizational culture, and if you're working through a continuity plan that is built in that concept of succession, not just at the ED level, but across the management team and the board team, and you're working with that internal sort of focus, then the opportunity to build that trust and have that transparency is there, is sort of inherent in that model.
Yeah, huge. Mark.
This is going to be a smorgasbord of ideas. There's no meal here. One of the things we have to look at is the values of the organization to begin with. I've worked for a lot of companies and the value set was either not there or I shouldn't have been there in the first place. Thinking of a very, very large bank, they were very process oriented and creativity was a sin. And I've worked in a creative company where structure was a sin and everything in between. Going back to what does a new employee need? The new employee needs the same thing as children and dogs coming into a situation. They need to be safe. I got this from a child psychologist last week, so stay with me. I didn't make it up. The first thing they need to feel is safe. The second thing they need to feel is to be included. And the third thing they need is to feel valued. And I got into, I just got out of Fritjof Capra's Systems View of Life 12-week seminar, and I'm trying to put all this together, but One of the things I met in the banking industry was the idea that the most successful person in that organization was the person who had the best Rolodex. And it wasn't built on, and this is a very linear thought pattern group. They were very hierarchical and there were formal networks, chains of command. But the informal network was what got you your success in this organization. Didn't take long to figure that out, but it took a long time to gather trust from the people who could implement the things that you wanted. Whereas other organizations, very different. You mentioned a consulting group. Of course, creativity was their value. Creativity was the thing they were looking for. So somebody coming in, and I'm thinking of networks where your router dies and you got to put a new one in. The new one that you put in has to integrate with that network, but it may be doing some things very, very much better than the last version of whatever it is. I'm not comparing us to machines. I'm just saying that when we work in networks, coming up to speed is really important, but also the flexibility. I'm working with the town right now who is very hierarchical. It's very siloed. creativity is kind of stunning them right now. I said, have you thought about buying electric vehicles with this line item for vehicles? And the dead silence in the room was very telling. So there we are. Thank you.
Wow. That is a ton for us to unpack. Thank you. Oh my gosh. The feeling safe, feeling included, feeling valued. I circled that. Yeah. Wow. And you know, I children and dogs, we are all at our children. So, yep. Yeah.
Well, I've been working with dogs for a long time. And when I told somebody, a trainer one time, I said, well, I want to get a new dog into the group, but I said, I don't want the dynamics to change. She goes, well, then don't get another dog.
Definitely the words for this conversation. Thank you. Nancy.
So a couple of things that Donna and Nora talked about kind of have my head going as far as what's the plan from the beginning. So if we're talking about a continuity plan, what do your human resources processes look like? What is your onboarding like? You know, do you have those one-on-one opportunities for any new person coming in? It isn't just replacing an ED or a CEO. What is your culture around involving and including a new person and helping them to feel valued? And, you know, because originally I had jotted down like, well, does your board one-on-one take a new ED out? Do you get to know each other? I know very few organizations where that happens initially. It may happen over time. That's a culture issue. Does your culture support investing that time in relationships across the board? So that's kind of what's been going around in my head listening to everybody.
Yeah. And What's clear is that these are conversations that are going to be different for every organization. And the importance of having the conversation. And that's the part, Nancy, that I'm sort of ruminating on as you're talking of We've seen HR processes where they say, here's the process. You know, this is our process. This is how we do things. What we're talking about here is building something that is, and I love those words, Mark, of feeling safe, included, and valued. Do we have processes around feeling safe, feeling included, feeling valued? And if not, is that important to us? Let's start right there. If it is not important, I as a new person should probably know that. I think that what are the processes, and they're going to be different for everyone, but having that conversation within the organization of what, and I'm looking forward to having that conversation about creating the future. Of what processes will help new people feel safe, feel included, feel valued. And I'm starting that because I'd really like to start with that next time. So thank you for that. Other thoughts that come up, I'm also looking at, and I'm forgetting who said it, so I apologize for that. I think it might have been you, Andrew, but I'm not sure, about triaging the work so there is no avalanche when somebody comes on. What needs to be in place for that? You know, we see so many times where someone leaves and their position isn't filled for 3 months, 4 months. what needs to be in place so that I'm stepping into a new position and I'm not stepping into 6 months of the old position before I can even see the new position.
So I think, you know, as folks have started to really tease out that when you start to get into these questions, you really do just get into some, you know, heart and soul of an organization kind of questions and how well that's understood. But in response to what you're raising, Hilde, I think, you know, far too often is the focus on what needs to get done. What do we do and what needs to get done, as opposed to what does it take to do it? And so what I would say is for that transition to be able to manage the avalanche, you have to have a real strong awareness of what does it take to accomplish whatever it is we are accomplishing, so that then you understand that. You know, I mean, I'm sure many of us have had experiences of, you know, why did you replace with that person? Like their skills were missing, or you didn't understand, or, you know, why did you say yes to that when we don't have the ability to do that? Or why did you say no to that? You know, I think it goes a lot, but I think that there is an overemphasis oftentimes in organizations around what we do rather than what does it take to do it. And so I think for succession, it's really getting at the heart of that inquiry of, well, what does it really take to do what we want to do? And what do the pieces look like? And again, that should be a line, in my opinion, that's a fiduciary line of inquiry that should be happening all the time within an organization. And if it's going on all the time, when it comes time to make a shift, and, you know, I go back to something I said in the last meeting, your approach to succession and continuity should also include offloading as much as it should onloading. So you should be in a process of inquiry that's saying, well, what does it take? Do we have the right things? What do we need? Where does that exist? So that if you're in that line of inquiry, a vacancy becomes just, you know, an extension of that inquiry. Well, what are we trying to do? What does it take? What are we missing right now? And therefore, what do we need? And if there's a course shift, that's just a natural strategy conversation, which is, if we're thinking about doing something differently, then what does it take to do that? And again, then where do we align with that?
There is so much in what you just said. My head just went, yes, as it frequently does. Yeah. We talked in the cohort this past month, we talked about the power of flowcharting, of knowing what it actually takes to do everything, every function in the organization, and the power of flowcharting that to show all the little stuff that goes into every time I've ever seen a group do that and bring it to the board, for example. And I mentioned board because board is usually one step removed from the day-to-day. The board all overwhelmingly says, we had no idea. It takes this much to do this. And so frequently, Justin, that's all held in the head of one person who does it. And yeah, so thank you for that. Nora, yeah.
Sort of follow along with that on a couple of things. The one thing just that came to me as Justin was speaking too is to make sure, however, that when we're looking at that, that we're also making room for the idea that somebody else coming into that position is going to be bringing different strengths and experiences and is not trying to emulate exactly what the existing person is, because we all build our jobs to our own strengths. And I know I've had that conversation with somebody who has said, but I can never do the public events or the public speaking the way you do. Well, then don't find somebody else who can. I do it because I built it. I'm good at that. I do it. I'm comfortable. You don't have to be. So I think that there's also the opportunity to look at what the other strengths of the person is bringing and adjusting things to fit that piece. And the other thought I had around the avalanche piece, again, going back to the team that's in place, if you've got a really healthy strong support team or management team, ideally a lot of those pieces can be shared out amongst that team until the new person is ready to take on and to take over some of those pieces, so that is, again, a broader continuity thinking. It doesn't, the responsibility does not lie or is not embedded in one person alone.
It's making me think of what we talked about last time about redundancy, about the importance of having that every function, you know, I have shared in the past, I think I shared with the cohort separately, that when I was one of the best definitions I ever heard of resilience included redundancy, and the person said, yeah, it's why we have two kidneys. It's why we have two lungs. In case one goes out, we've got backup. And so I think that there's a really big piece in there in terms of building redundancy into the organization, period. And it comes back to, again, continuity planning is for the organization, is not for a role. Yeah. We are heading on 10 minutes till the hour, and I'm blown away that the time has gone so fast. We will pick up with talking next time about continuing the conversation about conditions for success, what needs to be in place for there to be smooth, calm, safe continuity, and feeling calm about everything, so that the people themselves are feeling calm, and that the folks who depend on the mission can depend on the mission, what needs to be in place for that. For now, we have had a huge conversation, a brain bender, as it frequently is. I will ask that we all take a deep breath and let it out. We frequently take deep breaths in this work and don't realize we haven't let it out in about 2 days. So breathe in and out. Take a look at any notes you may have taken. Circle anything that is standing out to you. And if we can share some reflections, what is standing out to you as we leave the conversation?
It feels like another therapy session, Hildy.
Is that okay?
Yeah, it's fine. But quite seriously there, it does feel, I mean, some of you know sort of what I went through, but it does feel a bit like a therapy session. And I guess my reflection then is, okay, well, why the hell does it keep happening? I mean, there's something quite endemic about poor practice. So I guess my reflection to you and to everyone is not so much why can't we come up with the answers? Because, you know, I mean, spending two sessions with you guys over the last 2 months, I mean, the answers aren't especially difficult from what I've heard, but what is it that's not happening in terms of this disconnect between us knowing what the answers are and poor practice continuing quite widely from what I can see?
Mark just put in the chat, it's 2021. There's no excuse for bad design anymore. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think it's still prevalent to Carl's point. And I guess, you know, sort of my follow-up, Carl, to you is I think there is actually some simplicity to the questions that people seem to be afraid to ask because they're such core, you know, identity type questions. I mean, to follow up on kind of what I dropped in the chat, sort of, you know, these two words that we're talking about, continuity and succession, have, you know, embedded in them some core words like continue. What are you continuing? Like, is there efficacy in what you want to continue, just period? And I think, Carl, a lot of organizations won't ask design questions because a lot of them don't have great designs. You know, when it really comes down to it, the efficacy question across so much of the work is, let's just say there's more to be desired. in terms of what we're investing in and what's actually coming out on the other side. So I think that that's one. And then I think about the succession, which I've heard kind of what made me prompt that was it's success for whom is a big piece of it, because we've been bouncing around board members, staff members, volunteers, the person coming in, the person leaving. And so I think, you know, for me reflecting on it, to Carl's point, is there are very simple questions. We just have to live in those questions, like what is it we're trying to continue and what does it mean to, and who is it supposed to be successful for, this continuity that we're there. It's just scary when you answer those questions and you realize there's not much efficacy and nor is there a lot of success. And we don't like being in that space.
Thank you. Yeah. Who else? What is standing out to y'all?
I think for me,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think for me, it's just that practice of catalytic thinking, and how every time I think that like I'm narrowing in on this idea of some sort, it's like, no, I need to take, you know, more steps backwards and look at the bigger picture. And that it's not about succession planning. It's about the continuity of mission, and the succession planning is just one piece of that. So I think that's something that just has stuck with me.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you. Angie?
That was a great comment, Stephanie. And then just to build on to Justin's point too, like, and what struck me when Justin said it earlier too, about what not to keep doing or what to take off your plate. I've been really thinking about that a lot recently for just our own like individual mental health, and then also and then how that connects to the organization, sustainability of the organization, I think is important.
Real big, yeah.
I'll go back to simplicity is how I live. I don't know how to play in the complicated world. And so I so appreciate all of you and getting to think together. And Mark, you know, safety, inclusion, and value. It is what all human beings survive on, not just thrive on, but survive on. So that takes us back to that simplicity of, you know, if that's what it's going to take, you know, then what's it going to make possible, and then keep going through some things. But I also like the piece that you said, Hildy, continuity planning is for the organization, not the role. I just see it as a bigger picture thing that we're having this conversation on, even though some of us, many of us, are in the role in a way. I still think there. This has just such value for such a huge world audience. If we can keep it simple.
Yeah. Yeah. Very much so.
I can jump in if that's okay.
Yeah.
Just I guess to follow up on Donna's comments too. I like that simplicity of peace, but what's sticking out for me is also that thought around start at the beginning. Like, let's not wait until the end to make the decisions. Let's build it into the structure and the culture of the organization from day one. Which is fine as long as you're a brand new organization starting out, but you know, the rest of us will try to catch up. And Mark's words of feeling safe, feeling included, and feeling valued really resonated with me as well. Three other words I'll just contribute back, because it is one of the things that we're changing, is dignity, justice, and belonging. And I think that those mirror the three that you had said, Mark, very clearly, and one of the pieces that I'm looking at with those three words is changing the focus of EDI, equity, diversity, and inclusion, to dignity, justice, and belonging, looking at all human beings, really creating belonging. And the other words being more action words that lead to that ultimate belonging. But I think if we're able to think of that piece of feeling valued and belonging in any of our organizations, then whatever we do is probably going to lead us to a good end.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you.
I keep coming back to how this, I mean, this isn't a surprise to anybody, but it all keeps coming back to people and human nature and, you know, the foibles of us and those, you know, in this sector and those around the world who do whatever they do. And how do we, you know, I always think ahead to like, okay, how do we share some of these learnings with people in a way that they will accept them and use them, because it seems like it's very easy to fall into patterns of doing things that lead to bad outcomes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why creating the future is here. It's why you are all supporting and working on this cool stuff.
Yeah, I would add what Andrew was just saying about it. For me, all of this conversation comes back in some way to it's about the people, not the thing. And I think it was Justin that were you the one that talked about the doing, that so many of these discussions are about the doing, getting the tasks done. And yet it is about the people. We've talked an awful lot about the relationships that need to be built across the board from the beginning. And what does it take to sustain that, which is the continuity part.
Beautiful, yes. Mark, how about you? What's standing out to you? Oh, you're muted.
How much more I have to do?
All of us. Jackie, how about you?
Yeah, I'm thinking actually a lot about what Andrew put in the chat, I think kind of tongue in cheek, of everyone needs to be honest about everything. And I think that's really what I'm thinking about as kind of the check and balance in every stage of this, of is this honest to the organization and the people in it? Because I think that that is often a trap in these kinds of conversations, is it becomes a marketing thing around what are our values? What are we trying to seem? And it's not who are we really? And what do we actually practice in our values? And so I'm just thinking a lot about what it would look like if at every step we were asking, is this honest to who we are?
Oh boy. I'm always so grateful for your contributions beyond your note-taking. Always so grateful for your observations. Is there anybody else who hasn't shared? Dimitri, I know that you haven't shared your thoughts.
Going back to one of Jackie's first comments of the why, where why this organization, why this sort of overreaching goal exists, and why are we doing this? And I think that leads to values, that leads to so many other of the things that we've talked about here. You know, I was thinking about the concept of trust. Well, trust takes time, and trust takes intent. And if those three aren't together, then it's very hard to build trust. You can't, you know, we've talked about that earlier. So the continuity that we're talking about here is really based on the why and the trust to me. And that's sort of what I'm taking away from this.
Beautiful, thank you. I have a couple of things that are striking to me. The first, getting to the question, Carl, of why does this keep happening? The past 2 years, we have been in a deep inquiry and about to step into the what do we do from everything that we have been learning in terms of systems change within the social change arena. We're very used to talking about systems change out in the world, the kinds of systems that need to change in order for life to be what we envision. But realizing that none of the systems that we use day to day within organizations were designed intentionally for social change. They are all adapted and adopted from either the military, which is where we got organizational design and where we got strategic planning. So much of it coming from you know, 1,000 years of church charity, which is why we're very, very good at helping one person or one group at a time if we feel they're deserving, making them qualify for things. And so much of it comes out of the business world, which focuses on efficiency rather than effectiveness. And the business world has spent, you know, look at assembly lines. We spent decades and centuries. Angie, thank you. Beautiful. Centuries taking the human out of the business world. And you know, we talk about the fact that we don't have time for that quote touchy-feely bullshit of getting to know each other. We've got to get down to business. The answer to why it keeps happening is because we have intentionally created systems that do that. And we have this beautiful opportunity, which is what Creating the Future is stepping into right now, to redesign those systems. And one of the first that we are starting with is succession planning. So I wanted to share that because that really, really struck me. It really gets to the context of why we do, how we do what we do. And why we do it that way. And we do it that way because we've just been handed it and not because we designed it, saying what would actually affect bringing out the best in people so that they can do the best in community. The other thing that I can't stop thinking about throughout this is an old joke. I believe 3 jokes. That's it. I mean, I can't remember, but these I can remember. And this is a new person steps into a new job, gets to his desk and finds 3 envelopes. They're labeled 1, 2, and 3. And there's a little note on the top that says, if things start going south, read these envelopes in this order. And so he steps into the new position and things are going swimmingly, but things are starting to get a little bit hinky after about 6 months. And so he remembers the envelopes. He picks up the first envelope and the first envelope says, blame me. So he goes out and he says, it's my predecessor's fault. He did all of these things. He made it horrible. I can't deal with it. No, no, no. Everything is okay for now. Everything calms down. They support him. A couple months later though, everything's starting to get into turmoil. So he goes to the second envelope and the second envelope says, reorganize. So he reorganizes everything, he just every system, everything, and everything is running smoothly. And then in another few months, everything goes to hell in a handbasket again. And so he looks at the third envelope and the third envelope says, make out 3 envelopes. That's what we're trying to avoid. And those 3 envelopes have been in my mind as we've been talking today about what are the conditions for success. It's like, yeah, so long as you don't need those 3 envelopes, you're fine. On that note, I am so, so grateful for the conversation today and grateful for the opportunity to facilitate it. And we'll see the cohort folks in the next few days, and we'll see everyone else at our January integrity meeting. And it's been a pleasure and a wonderful holiday to all of you and a joyful and healthy 2022.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.